Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is your host, Doran Rosenfeld, and I should have a guest, and yes, as a matter of fact, I do. He just signed on, so let me just put him on. Steve, is that you?
Hello, Dr. Doran. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for showing up, Steve. I was starting to wonder if I was going to see you tonight.
I'm right here.
Well, this guy, everyone, he's a herbology expert, and he's going to talk tonight about healing yourself naturally with stuff that's out there. And he has a background. He came from standard Western allopathic medicine. And he started because these problems weren't getting solved by the things he was working with the medical doctors for. And he was making medical equipment to help beat these diseases, but he couldn't beat them. The diseases were still here. So he branched off on his own. And as I have written here, after many years of working with allopathic medicine, Steve Frank found his way into herbal medicine, studying with herbalists, physicians, chiropractors, and physical therapists. Led Mr. Frank to the development of a number of products for the treatment of common physical injuries and maladies using natural medical techniques. That's natural medical techniques. That's what he's going to talk about tonight. He's drawing from thousands of years of traditional herbal remedies and the latest modern physiology and healing studies. He has synthesized some natural products that complement the directions and actions of the constantly adapting human body. We're all struggling to survive in everything we do, and he can make it better for us. These products address issues of sleep disturbance, injured tissue repair, infection control, and hormonal balance. Years of clinical studies, laboratory work, and treatment experience have demonstrated the utility of these products. Mr. Frank now offers these products through Nature's Right to empower everyone who seeks to regain and maintain health naturally. He came to rely on herbs through a journey from standard Western medicine to the more complementary practice of Eastern medicine, which the body has the power to heal itself. Maybe a little help from the outside is needed, but the body can basically heal itself. He started his career 40 years ago designing modern medical equipment for large corporations. This led to the development of specialty experimental equipment for medical researchers. From there, he was led to what he does today, use natural products for ubiquitous problems that seem to affect most people. And I'm sorry I couldn't get through this. I'm having a problem thinking normally because there's so much going on out there. So, Steve, maybe you can help me calm down, help us all get back into focus.
Well, you know, I think you did a wonderful job. That was it almost sounded like you knew me better than I knew myself. I have spent many years researching these products and working with them in the laboratory, in the clinic, in the field, and learned a lot of things. And what I try to do with the products is share what I've learned. And with Dr. Dorn, let me start at the beginning. Because
yes.
In the world of natural medicine, for thousands of years, people have been using herbs to help their bodies heal. And there's an extraordinary body of knowledge surrounding these herbs and these techniques that really has helped us all the way up to the present age of man, where we've become more reliant on allopathic or Western medicine, as it's known. But in these days, it seems that most of the herbs that are available to us are in tinctures of this herb or that herb, or capsules of some herb. And most of the people that I meet are really not educated on how to use these herbs to heal their problems. So if you walk down the aisle at a Whole Foods or an Earth Origins or something, and you look at all those herbs and you go, well, you know, I've got eczema here. What do I use? There's the problem. What we need are not bottles of herbs and tinctures of herbs. What we need are solutions to problems.
Yes.
And that's what I'm doing that's different.
Okay.
I come from a background of engineering. And in engineering, the first and most important thing to do is define the problem. If you don't do that first, you can throw all sorts of solutions out there, but you don't know what's right. So defining the problem is important. So I applied that same engineering mentality to the herbal world. And as I studied the different herbs and what they did and which ones can be used with which ones and all of the nuances of herbal medicine, I started putting together some combinations of herbs that address common maladies, just as you said. So let's say in the case of eczema. Well, it's commonly known that calendula is good for your skin and comfrey is good for your skin. And St. John's wort can reduce itching, but what do I use? How much? How do I use it? Right? So what we did is to come up with a product which was originally called eczema relief, but we're not allowed to call it that anymore. We just call it rash relief. And it tries to accomplish three things. And this three-headed approach is kind of a common denominator to all of our products. The first thing that we have to do is relieve the symptoms. The next thing you need to do is fix the problem. And the third thing is to help the body to heal. So in the case of something like eczema, the symptoms are going to be pain and itching. So we put in some herbs to deal with that. But unlike just an anti-itch cream that you would get from a pharmaceutical manufacturer, we don't stop there. Because what you really need to do is fix the problem so it goes away, not just relieve the symptoms. That's a Band-Aid. So how do you fix the problem? Well, in this particular example, it turns out that eczema is caused by a symbiotic relationship between either a bacteria and a fungus or a virus and a fungus, where one disrupts the skin and the other gets in and uses the cell machinery to multiply. So what you need, in addition to relieving the pain and the itch, is something that's antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal. So we put that in there. A number of herbs and natural compounds that will fix that problem. And then, of course, the third thing you need to do is help the body to heal. You've got to get the skin to close up. as if the skin's not closed, it's not a barrier, and the infections will come back and you'll have continual eczema. So in this example, you can see what we're trying to do in this little jar that we call rash relief is solve the whole problem. We're not just dealing with the symptoms. We're not just trying to get rid of the cause. We're also trying to help the body heal. All three things are important. And that is what makes the approach that we take at Nature's Right different than most other products.
Okay. Okay.
So I guess you could say that what we're trying to do here is take a new direction with natural medicine rather than have the local herbal expert prescribe you a combination of things and have to reinvent it all over again, all over the country for each different person.
Right.
We put together a set of products that address things like sinusitis, respiratory infections, rash, poisoning, sleep disorders, so that all you need to do is know what's wrong with you. Oh, I have a back pain. Well, then you need the back and neck relief. And in that will be all of the herbs that you need to relieve the symptoms, fix the problem, and help the body heal. So you don't have to be an herbal expert to benefit from the products. That's the idea.
That's great news.
Have you ever gone to one of the health food stores and tried to pick out a supplement to take?
Good luck.
Right. You can ask the people that work in the aisle, and they know a little bit. Some of them, you know, may have had a training class or two, and they can lead you toward a particular herb or another particular herb. But they're not addressing the product or the problem in a comprehensive manner. And so that's where we step in.
Uh-huh.
Now, there are some issues in the world of health that are a little more difficult than something like eczema. Respiratory infections or, let's say, sleep disorders that I think, you know, really pretty much go over the capability of some amateur that's trying to put together herbs. And so we're trying to say, all right, we can tackle that problem. And I spent years researching the solutions to these problems, 20 years, actually, or more. Wow, time flies. But the idea there is I could go into the laboratory and do the research on antisepsis and antimicrobials and take the years of research and produce these products. Sometimes the solutions that we have are not novel in the sense of what we use. I use a lot of common herbs and natural compounds. But oftentimes, the key to the success and the efficacy is the protocols. Let me give you an example, okay? Silver colloids have become relatively popular over the last 20 years as people have recognized that they are quite antimicrobial. However, most people don't know how to use them correctly. Case in point, if you have a sinus infection and you pick up a bottle of silver colloid and you take a teaspoon a day, it will do absolutely nothing for your sinus infection. First problem is you take a teaspoon and you ingest it and it gets disseminated throughout your entire body so that the actual density in the tissues where you need it to be effective is extremely low. Okay, well, that's a problem. So the first thing you need to do is put it in the right place. If you have a sinus infection, don't drink a teaspoon of silver colloid. Problem's not in your stomach. It's in your nose. Okay, so in that particular product, we have administration styles of neti pot, of a nasal spray bottle, to put it in your nose and in your sinuses. That's where it belongs. That way, with far less of the active agents, you can achieve far higher tissue densities and achieve a much more efficacious kill of the bacteria or the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because everyone...
Well, here's another one for you. It turns out that bacteria and a lot of virus can replicate in double in their numbers every 20 minutes. The cells divide for bacteria about every 20 minutes. So if you have 100,000 bacteria in your sinuses, which of course you have more, but we'll use that number. It's easy to work with. If you have 100,000 of them, in 20 minutes, you could have 200,000. In 20 minutes more, you could have 400,000. And within an hour, you've got about 1 million. That's a problem. So if you were to spray some silver colloid into your nose, you might knock that 100,000 down. Well, let's say you knock it down to 50,000, because it's much more difficult to kill it when it's in your nose than it is when it's in a petri dish in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you knock that population down from 100,000 to 50,000, right? Well, 20 minutes later, it's right back where it was. It doubled from 50 back to 100. No gain. But what if instead you were to spray that and you were to do it more often than the replication time? So let's say you spray it and you knock it down to 50,000 and you wait about 10 minutes and it's now up to 75. And you spray it again and now you knock it down to 35. And you wait 10 minutes and it's up to 70. But now you cut it in half again. You can keep driving it down. If you keep chasing it, you can keep winning. So there, the important part of the protocol is you must do it frequently enough.
Uh-huh.
If you spray it up your nose 3 times a day, it will do nothing. You'll kill some off, they'll replicate right back. So here, the other part of this process is the right protocol. You have to spray it regularly enough, and you have to spray it in the right place. So if you do that, you can take a valuable tool, an antimicrobial like silver colloid, and you can actually conquer a sinus infection. Likewise, if you want to go deeper into the sinuses, put it in your neti pot. Run it through your sinuses. That'll really knock it down. So protocol here is very important. And one of the things that we try to do with our products is, in the case where protocol is critical, it's listed right on the bottle. Now, there's a lot of people out there that'll sell you silver colloid, but they don't tell you how to use it so that it'll work.
Right.
Well, that's useless. That's useless. That's like giving someone a Cray supercomputer and saying, you can run the world with this computer, but we're not going to tell you how.
Yeah. Problem.
So that's another aspect of the natural products world that we're trying to address. And that is, when you get a product, one of our products, it tells you how to use it so that it will work. And all the products are different. You know, if you have digestive problems, there's a whole process that you have to go through in order to make that work. This is a good example. Let's talk about this for a minute. There's a lot of people out there who are buying probiotics.
Yeah.
Some of them are really expensive. And do I get the one that's got 6 billion or the one that's got 12 billion? Oh, I don't know. But think about what's happening here. You're putting those into your stomach, where most of them will get killed anyway by stomach acids. And then you're dumping them into your GI tract, which is probably overgrown with bad bacteria and fungus. Now, these little critters down there have learned how to survive over 150 million years. And those new good bacteria that come down are going to want to eat what those bacteria are eating. So the bacteria in your gut are not going to let them survive. So you're going to eat those expensive probiotics and poop them right out. It's kind of like
a lot of good that does, right?
It's like if you were going to go into a bad neighborhood and say, well, I'm just going to move in. 1,000 good Samaritans will plant gardens and turn this community around, right? But there's no place for them to live. So they're just going to walk on through and find a different town. So when you want to address something like a GI tract problem, when you got problems with your gut, the very first thing you have to do is to make room at the inn. You've got to get rid of some of the bad bacteria and fungus before you reseed with the good guys. So in this this digestive kit that we have, the protocol is absolutely critical. Just like anyone else out there, if you go and eat a bunch of expensive probiotics every day, you probably go after a couple of months, you go, well, this really isn't helping. Duh. There's no way for them to stay there and do what they do. So you have to understand that before you start eating them, you've got to make a place for them to stay. So in that particular protocol, we actually have you dose, bolus doses of the silvercolloid. You drink it. This then goes and kills off a bunch of the bacteria and fungus that are down there, makes room. So when you send down the probiotics, there's some place for them to grab a hold and start their cultures. If you don't do that, you're wasting your time. And it's not to say that probiotics don't work. It's just to say you were using them wrong. And there's another aspect of this, of course, that's a little subtler, and that is after years and years of having bad bacteria and fungus in your gut, it has seriously damaged the mucus layer that protect the microvilli, and it has started to eat away at that tissue, the epithelial lining of your gut. That's caused a lot of damage. And in fact, it's that damage that causes you all of the symptoms. Your microvilli and the lining of your intestinal tract was never meant to come in direct contact with food. It's protected by a mucus layer. But the fungus will eat that mucus layer, and the bacteria will help them. So what happens is you expose the raw tissue to your food, and your food goes, whoa, I'm not supposed to be touching that. What is that? Invader, invader. And it sounds the alarm. And so you get an inflammation reaction. Your body thinks there's an invasion, starts sending down lymph and white blood cells to fight this invasion, but it's just food. So imagine now the miles and miles of intestines that you have, all inflamed. There's your problem. So the third part of this protocol is to repair that lining and replace that good mucus protective layer. Remember, fix the problem. That's always part of this. And so we, you know, really advocate taking some herbs after you've gone through this process to help repair the lining and to restore that mucus layer. And that's a what I call a holistic approach to solving this problem. We're not just focusing on some probiotics or killing some bacteria. We're taking the whole picture in the right order. It's kind of like if you've ever flown across Kansas in the fall, you can see the farmers burning their fields. But why do they do that? Because they know before they're going to waste their money on the winter wheat seed, they want to kill off all the weeds. Well, same thing applies here. Before you waste your money on all those expensive probiotics, kill off the bad bacteria and the fungus so they've got a place to grow.
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the gist of what we're doing, the direction of what we're doing. And we apply that same philosophy to respiratory infections, sleep disorders, food poisoning, all sorts of things.
Yeah, sleep disorders are becoming more and more common.
And interestingly enough, I would say that the incidence of sleep disturbances is not increasing. It's the awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Most people didn't know what sleep disturbances were 20, 30 years ago, back when I was in college taking classes on sleep and dreaming. We were learning how to understand, you know, K-complexes and REM periods and respiration rates and muscle tonuses, and they still do that today. We have not come very far. What has happened is more of an awareness with sleep study places and more companies out there trying to make money from it. So they're teaching you about what it is that's been disturbing your sleep. And it turns out, I think CDC said there's about 40 million diagnosed cases of sleep apnea, which is just one of the many disturbances that you can experience. Now, they'll also be the first ones to tell you there's probably more out there that we just don't know about. There's people that are sleeping poorly, and they don't know why. They wake up, and they don't feel rested. They fall asleep all day long. They're cranky, and they don't realize it's because of a sleep problem.
Hmm.
So getting back to sleep apnea, this is one of those more popular sleep disturbances lately, because the whole industry has been built on trying to treat this. But their treatments are misdirected. A CPAP machine forcing air into your lungs. Please, if you were getting flat tires all the time, pulling nails out of your tires and patching them all the time, would you be satisfied simply patching your tires all day? Or would you ask yourself, where are the nails coming from? I've got to stop these nails getting in the road.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Again, fix the cause. And the cause of sleep apnea is not the absence of a mask. That's not what causes it. The absence of a CPAP machine is not the cause of sleep apnea. So I actually have sleep apnea. That's the reason I'm harping on this. I mean, I spent too many sleepless nights. And finally, I said, okay, enough of this. There was this one period where I don't think I slept for more than a minute at a time for 2 or 3 days. And boy, that's tough to deal with. That is pretty tough to deal with. So this was back in, oh my goodness, around early 2000s. And I borrowed a pulse oximeter from a friend of mine and hooked it up to my laptop and instrumented myself for muscle tonus and for respiration I could get off the oxygen sensor, and analyzed my sleep, recorded it on my laptop and analyzed it, and I found out what the actual cause of the sleep apnea was. Remember, we started this whole conversation by saying, you've got to identify the problem before you start throwing solutions at it. We didn't do that. We just started throwing solutions like surgery and mouth appliances and CPAP machines without really understanding the root cause of the sleep apnea. And it turns out, if you don't mind my going on, it turns out that as you go to sleep, you go through various stages. The first stage is drowsiness, and then stage two is where your body imposes something called inhibition of muscular tonus. Now, this is done because out of stage two, you're going to go into REM, where you dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't inhibit your skeletal muscles while you were dreaming, your body wouldn't know the difference of your dreaming about running and your legs would be running. This would be a problem. So, yes, right? That would be a problem. Now, sometimes that breaks down and you'll actually kick or move in your sleep. But that inhibition of muscular tonus in people who have sleep apnea overextends into the area of your spinal cord where the signals from your brain to your diaphragm go. When this happens, your breathing diminishes. And so someone with sleep apnea, as they transition into stage two in preparation for dreaming, their breathing diminishes and it'll come down really low and then stop. And after a few seconds or so, your brain says, hey, I'm getting a lot of carbon dioxide build up here in the blood, pal, and I got no oxygen. Take a breath right now. And so you go, and you take a rapid inhalation. You take a deep breath real quick. Well, that will suck your soft palate into your airway. You can hear it. That's what makes that snort.
Oh.
The other thing it does is it partially arouses you from your stage two sleep, makes you kind of wander back towards stage one, which is just the drowsiness, where the inhibition of muscular tonus is relaxed and your breathing gets deeper again, and then you start to drift off a little bit. You go into stage two and you do it again. So people with sleep apnea will keep bouncing back and forth between stage two and stage one. They'll never get to go into REM or into delta and theta sleep, which you need. So the problem here is not really a sagging soft palate. Well, sure, that aggravates the condition. The problem is that you stop breathing and have to take a rapid inhalation and you startle yourself. Well, what if we could amplify that signal from your brain to your diaphragm? So it may diminish a little bit while you're going through stage two, but you don't stop breathing. Well, if we did that, then you'd never have to go and take that rapid inhalation and startle yourself. And it wouldn't be a sleep disturbance. You'd make it right on through into stage two, where you'd be doing your dreaming. And when you dream, your respiration rate picks up quite a bit, so there'd be no problem with the oxygenation of your blood at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we decided to do. So I thought, there's got to be some herb that improves the signal from the brain to the diaphragm. You know, it comes out of C3, 4, and 5 cervical vertebrae, makes the phrenic nerve, goes down to the diaphragm. And I started reading about it, and it turns out there is. There's an herb called lobelia that has actually been used for thousands of years as a respiratory stimulant. So I tried taking some lobelia. And you know what? The next night, I slept like a baby all the way through. Now, you could say, okay, well, that's just a coincidence because you were so overly tired because you hadn't slept for 3 days, right? Okay. So the next night, I did what any scientist would do. I didn't take it. I thought, all right, I'm not going to take it tonight, and we'll see what happens. Well, that night, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I hadn't fallen asleep yet because I kept snorting myself awake, and I thought, oh, my God, this is crazy. I can't do this. So I broke down and took some, and poof, off to sleep.
Huh.
So that's what we would call an autocorrelation experiment, where you put the agent in, then you take it out, then you put it in, then you take it out, and you see whether the effect is mimicked by that performance. In fact, it was. So I combined that with a number of different herbs that improve pleural efficiency, relax the trapezius muscles where the phrenic nerve passes through, and actually help to relax you so that you can fall asleep, and turned it into sleep apnea relief, which happens to be one of our largest selling products. You can't imagine, Dr. Dorn, when people buy a bottle of this, and it's hard to get them to buy it because everybody goes, well, how is an herbal remedy going to solve my obstructive sleep apnea. And I'm like, well, your obstructive sleep apnea has the same cause as the central sleep apnea. We're just not admitting that as a society. Then they'll buy a bottle and try it. And their wife will go, oh, my goodness, you slept so well. You hardly snored. You slept the whole night. You didn't hear your breathing stop. Next thing you do, they come back and buy three or six, or some people buy 12 bottles at a time. They don't want to be without it.
Just like
yep,
that.
It's fun stuff. I've slept with that every night for the last, oh, gosh, probably 17 years now.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, other sleep problems. I wanted to ask you, for example, I take melatonin. And that doesn't help me get to sleep at all, but I think it helps me sleep longer because I sleep later in the day than I used to.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to defining the problem. There are a lot of sleep disturbances, and you have to find the right solution for your problem. If your problem is a hormonal imbalance, a melatonin imbalance, then yes, that is what you need to take. So you have to get back and take a look and say, what is the issue that's causing my sleep disturbance? Because until you know that, you don't know what the correct solution is. Take restless legs, for instance. People that have restless legs often don't know that they do. They're just not sleeping well, and they can't figure out what it is. And so they can take all the melatonin they want. They can take vitamin D, and they can listen to soft music or whatever, but that's not the problem. The problem is the nerves in their legs are causing their muscles to clench, and that's disturbing the sleep. So in that particular case, you have to address that. So defining the problem is key.
And medical doctors, I mean, how do you do this? Medical doctors, they don't really do it for you, do they?
No. What they would do is either suggest that you get a CPAP machine or surgery or a dental appliance. But I don't know. When you look at the statistics, they say that 60% of the people that try CPAP are not able to continue with it. Because it's uncomfortable. Yes, it's noisy. It's uncomfortable. You get respiratory infections from it. There's a lot of problems with it. It's very poor success rate as far as people continuing with that. When you look at the surgeries, they say 50% of the people who get the surgery, it does not help. And that, by the way, is a very expensive and painful surgery. And if you go through that and it didn't help, that would be beyond frustrating.
Yeah. Well, that's like the case with back surgery. 50% of them work.
There you go.
50% don't.
Now, most of the doctors that I've seen who are in practice are going to refresher courses and reading articles. And if you know anything about the publishing industry or the refresher class industry, you know that nothing can be taught in those that is not very well accepted.
Yeah.
It's very well accepted. It's, you're talking about old theories. Anything that's new will be shunned from the literature and from the seminars for decades. So the doctors, it's not that they don't mean well, they don't have access to this. They've got to practice. They've got patients to see, and nowadays with HMOs, they have to see them bang, 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 one after the other. They don't have time to research something or to study some slightly alternative technique that may show promise. They just don't have time to do that. It's not their job. It's actually the job of the research community to present them with these concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the governing boards for the research community, the folks who decide who gets the funding, are usually retired doctors. And so these guys are guys that were trained on textbooks that were written around the turn of the 1900th century, not last century. And yeah, so the progress of research is extraordinarily slow. I was frustrated by this because for some years I was just doing the medical research and we were going after grants with some extraordinarily effective cutting-edge antisepsis techniques. And time after time after time, the grants were getting turned down. They were just not accepted for NIH CDC funding because they want to fund research that they know will succeed. Because that way, they get to keep their job on the committee of selecting them because they did a good job of selecting the experiments because all of theirs succeeded. Well, the only way to do that is to select for funding experiments that have already been run. Then the guys that make the selection and rate the submissions know that it's going to work out because you show them data because that you already did it. So new research rarely ever gets funded. Something that's as heretical as a new approach to antisepsis or sleep apnea, forget about it. So the system is broken. And that's why the doctors don't have access to this new information. And, of course, if you approach them one-on-one, they're busy. They got bills to pay. They got a Lamborghini payment to make. They got kids going to college, braces to pay for. They don't have time to change the world. They've got techniques for treating everything that you can believe that they were taught in school. Now, whether they work well or not, doesn't matter. That's what they've got. You know what they say, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And if you say, hey, look, I got this nail gun, they're like, yeah, I can't swing it. It's got a tube on it, a hose on it. You know, they don't get it. But that's where the opportunity arises in the natural health products world. Because a lot of customers, a lot of people out there, look at the solutions that they're getting from allopathic medicine, and they're saying, you know what? This isn't working. Is there anything else out there? And it's actually the citizenry of the country that's finding these alternative methods because they need something that really works or works without making their hair fall out or their hearing go bad or their bones weaken. They're getting tired of being sold solutions from the pharmaceutical company in the allopathic medicine world that leave them worse off and don't work very well. And so they are actually exploring some of the natural health products. Years ago, I thought that, you know, the way to do this was to do a whole bunch of clinical studies and publish the research and show everyone this really works. These natural health products work. And so I was running a company back then, and we had a clinical study department and a microbiology department, and we were running clinical studies to demonstrate the efficacy of some of the products that we made for healing soft tissue, you know, like for tendonitis or rotator cuff injuries and for treating shingles. You know, we had some great clinical studies going, and they were showing extraordinary efficacy. So I had a couple folks in the lab that were writing this up in the standard journal format, and we were submitting them to editors for publishing. This is what we're supposed to do. The only difference was I was paying for it instead of the grants from the government. The $2 billion a year that goes for medical research doesn't. Well, we got a bunch of papers. Yeah, right? We got a bunch of papers out of it, and nobody would publish them. We were not associated with the teaching hospital. We did not have a bunch of MDs and PhDs on staff. And the studies had been only done in one clinical study. They want them repeated in multiple institutions. And this is a lot of what the NIH CDC money goes for, is replicating experiments. We didn't have that. So they wouldn't publish all the papers. So the doctors couldn't get to see the information. They couldn't learn about the techniques. Nobody could.
Right.
That's what's broken about the system. But the people are looking for them on their own. And I found a very interesting thing, Doc. You're going to get a kick out of this. It turns out the doctors are far more skeptical than the people. Right? You know, if you walk up to someone on the street that's had sinus infection for, five, six, 7 years, they've gone through multiple courses of antibiotics, probably, God forbid, had surgery. They know the problem's still there and it's not getting any better. They know what they've been through. So they're going to say, yeah, I'll try your program. Sure. What have I got to lose? You walk up to an ENT doctor and you say, look, I've got this great program for sinusitis. It doesn't use any antibiotics. There's no collateral damage. It works like a champ. They'll go, give me a paper on it. Maybe I'll read it this weekend. And that'll be the end of it. They'll read the paper and they go, yeah, well, it was interesting, but, can you show me a 2 or 3 more studies on it? I really don't feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
So they turn out to be a phenomenal impediment in the advancement of medicine. I suppose if any of them are listening right now, I'm not making them happy, but sorry, guys.
Well, I don't see any comments or phone calls, so far so good, Steve.
Yeah, that's so far so good.
So speaking of calling in, that's the show. Tell people how to get in touch with you in case they have more questions about some of your products.
Sure. Thanks for allowing me a plug. You can go to our website at MyNatureSRite, spelled R-I-T-E, .com. That's MyNatureSRite, R-I-T-E, .com. And you can see a lot of the products there. Of course, since we don't live in a country that has free speech, I cannot tell you on that website how they work or what they do, but you can get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to learn more about natural health and maintaining your own natural health, then you can go to a blog that's not associated with the website, and there's lots to be learned there. And that is at healthcaretoolkit.info. Healthcaretoolkit.info. And there, the book that I've written, revealing all the things that I've learned for the last, well, a lot of them, not all of them, over the last 20 years, they're all there for you to read and learn from. It's very interesting, and you'll likely find some solutions that will help you with your problems there. Of course, there's an info button you can click on our website if you want to email me directly. And I'm usually reasonably helpful at pointing you in the right direction to get the information that you need.
Mm-hmm. So how large is your organization, Steve?
Huge, huge. Thousands of employees and just kidding. we're a small company. And we're, self-funded, bootstrapped, kind of startup thing, although it's been a long time since we started, so it's hard to consider us that. But we're less than a dozen people. We like to keep things lean. And I don't do as much research anymore because that's very expensive. Laboratory time, I've rented far too much laboratory space over the years.
Yeah.
So we're a small company. All the products are made by hand in America. We have our encapsulated products are encapsulated in New Jersey with a GMP ISO 9000 encapsulator. Our gels and our colloids are all made in-house. We're a GMP facility that's audited by the FDA way too frequently. They just love to. Yeah, you know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have a number of products that I think your listeners would find very useful. We address a lot of things that are part of our lives every day. Back and neck pain, shoulder, knee, elbow problems, twisted ankles, food poisoning. I mean, there's a good one, right?
That's interesting.
Food poisoning is really an interesting one because if you get food poisoning, they really don't know what to do about it. They can give you something like Pepto-Bismol to make your stomach not hurt so bad.
Yeah.
But if you get salmonella or something, you're going to be sick for days. And if it's really bad, they'll put you on IV antibiotics. That's really devastating for your entire GI tract. But
yeah.
The easiest way, once again, is to address the cause. The cause is you got some nasty bacteria in your gut from what you just ate. Kill them. So we used an enhanced aqueous silver colloid and a 2-bolus dosing technique that's right on the bottle. And it works like a champ. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten calls from people saying, you saved my vacation, because they brought that along when they went to Mexico. We've even had that go to South America and Southeast Asia, all over the place. I've gotten emails and testimonials from people. But actually, that product we started using when I had kids, because, you know, kids will run around the yard, play in the dirt, and pet the dog, and then run inside and eat a hot dog and ingest all that stuff. Or worse yet, you know, my son was really good at this. He would leave a burrito in the car underneath the seat. A few days later, he'd find it and go, whoa, I found my burrito, and eat it. in my household growing up, there was ample opportunity to make good use of that. And I think really anyone who's got kids knows they get tummy aches a lot. And I would watch them. It would just bring a smile to my face because they'd be sick and sitting on the couch holding their belly, you know, and their eyes squinted shut, and they're like, oh. And then I'd give them some of this stuff. An hour later, they'd be up chasing their brother around. Not like it didn't even happen. So it's a very simple solution, and it addresses the problem. Instead of getting rid of the symptoms, you just go right after the bacteria and kill them, which is really an interesting point, because years ago I did some research. There's a bacteria out called 0157H7. It's also referred to as a hemorrhagic bacteria, hemorrhagic E. coli. It's a variant of the E. coli that is extraordinarily toxic. But the problem with this bacteria is it has an endotoxin that's contained within the cell boundary. If you kill the bacteria using penicillin, it breaks the cell wall. That's the way penicillin works. And some of the other antibiotics work by keeping the cell wall from joining once it's divided. They have the same effect. What happens is the endoplasm spills out and causes a toxic reaction in your body. So if you get this hemorrhagic bacteria, they can't treat it too quickly, because if they do, the release of all this toxin will throw you into toxic shock, kill you, cause your kidneys to shut down, you die. Not good. But a very interesting thing that I noted, I was killing these bacteria, the E. coli, side by side in a very powerful microscope and watching them. And you could see the ones that I was killing with the penicillin and amoxicillin. The cell walls were breaking, and they were spilling out the endoplasm. In the cells, the bacteria that we were killing with the enhanced aqueous silver colloid, what we call food poisoning relief, they died with their cell walls intact. Now, that's really important, because what that means is you can dose it hard enough to knock out that hemorrhagic E. coli without causing a toxic shock problem. Now, that is something that the medical community should just go nuts over. If they understood that, if they knew that they could be treating food poisoning, nobody should ever have to die again from food poisoning.
Right.
There's no reason. There's no reason. Just one little bottle of this and boop, you're done.
Sounds great.
We actually sell them in a little travel kit, right? Because you can't take anything more than 3 ounces over. So the travel kit has 4 2-ounce bottles that'll fit. You know, you can fit it in one of those 1-quart Ziploc bags. So you can take it in your carry-on luggage with you. Specifically because it's pretty common. You go into third world countries and you just enjoy the heck out of eating the food there, but you stand a good chance of getting some.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So what would you say is the biggest problem in your area? What, you're in Colorado?
No, I'm actually in Florida. I started the company in Colorado. We moved.
Oh, gotcha. I'm sorry. Okay, so what's the biggest problem down there?
Huh. I really never thought about it regionally. I think it probably has to do with demographic. And I think the biggest problem we have down here is people with knees and elbows and shoulders that hurt, because the average age in Sarasota is pretty old. In Venice, I think the average age is 68.
Uh-huh.
And we have this one product called Bruise, Strain, and Tear Repair that's specifically designed for soft tissue damage. Now, tendonitis, epicondylitis, tennis elbow, golfer's elbow, those are all tendon problems. And carpal tunnel is a lot of ligament issues. But all of that is due to the lack of repair of the connective tissue in our bodies as we get older. And the reason for that is really probably more than you want to get into on this show. But the solution is not to get cortisone injections to knock out the inflammation. That just gets rid of the pain for a little while. It doesn't fix the problem. And remember, that's what we're trying to do, fix the problem. So, again, you have this three-pronged approach, right? First, get rid of the symptoms. So in that particular product, we've got a bunch of herbs. We've got arnica and willow to get rid of the pain. But they're analgesic. They're not anti-inflammatory, because you need that inflammation process, because that's what tells your brain there's something here that needs to be repaired. If you block that, it thinks it's done. So after we relieve the pain with those herbs, the next thing that you need to do is fix the cause. Now, the cause is usually micro tears or damage in the ligaments and tendons. And for that, we have two herbs in there, plantain and comfrey, which contain a substance called allantoin. Allantoin, actually, increases the activity rate of the fibroblasts. Now, the fibroblasts are the little collagen factories. They're semimodal little cells, and they run around and produce reparative collagen to fix the connective tissue. That's a very interesting concept. Fix the connective tissue. Well, cortisone shots don't do that.
No.
And then, of course, the third thing is to help the body to heal. So we have herbs that also facilitate the blood flow and the lymphatic flow to the region and the muscle lubricity, so that you get better muscle sharing and the residual trauma from the injury in the muscle doesn't cause load sharing problems and recreate the tears in the ligaments. But all of these things work together to actually repair the damage. So if you've got a damaged medial epicondyle, it's keeping you from playing tennis or golf, and you put this stuff on, again, protocol is important, because you put it on 3 times a day, and depending on how old you are, it'll take a month or two, and you will actually have strengthened it to the point where you can go back to doing the sport without re-injuring it. Cortisone doesn't do that. I've got some guys, some customers that are in their 80s, and one guy couldn't raise his arm over his head because of his shoulder problems, and he came in and bought a tube of it, loved it, came back and bought three more. And now we see him about once a year. He comes in and buys a half dozen tubes. He keeps putting it on. His shoulder keeps getting better. He came in one day. He was waving his arm over his head going, Steve, look at this. Look at this. I got fellas who used to golf, going back to golfing. They quit because it hurt too much. Now they're back doing it. Tennis players. As a matter of fact, we have one tennis shop in Sarasota that has it on their counter. And the doctors in the area and the people at the tennis club send people in to get it because they know how well it works.
Good
and it's
stuff.
One of those fun things. Yeah, it's one of those fun things to look at because, you know, Dr. Jordan, I hate to use the phrase, but the paradigm shift, you remember that? It was real popular around the turn of the century. But
oh, yeah.
It is a paradigm shift here because people don't realize you can actually fix these problems. Everybody thinks you just got to get a good painkiller or a wrap to put around it or some elastic band or a knee brace or something. You can actually fix it. We actually did clinical studies years ago showing this. It was absolutely remarkable, the recoveries people make when they use this. But again, it's a case where nobody knows you can do this. They don't know it's
right. Yeah, it's truly
but it's popular down here. We got a lot of old and retired folks down here, myself included, not retired but getting old. And boy, that stuff really it's a savior.
Good stuff.
Good yeah.
Stuff.
Now,
here.
I think.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No. What were we gonna say?
Oh, I was gonna say that there are some issues and ailments that really cross all state lines and territories and demographics. For instance, respiratory issues. We're dealing with the biggest respiratory crisis that we've seen in this country. And there are lots and lots of ways to deal with that using natural methods, far better than just laying in a hospital bed with a ventilator.
Yeah.
But again,
much at all.
There are actually countries, and I've read papers from Japan and, what was the other one from? I think it was Sweden and one from the Philippines. There are countries out there that are actually doing research on using nebulized enhanced aqueous silver colloids to treat these respiratory conditions, and they're publishing them. We can't do that in the United States, but other countries are not inhibited as we are. So there will come a time when we realize that dealing with the big C is really no more difficult than getting rid of a cold.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I hope I live to see that day, but like we talked about earlier, progress in the medical world is slow.
Yes. That it is. Yes, it's amazing. I mean, when I went to chiropractic school 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, something like that. Anyway, we got cadavers, you know, human bodies to look at from some recent medical schools. Those cadavers, they've been open on the front for medical doctors to look at the various organs. The spine, the back had never been opened on these cadavers.
Right.
So these medical doctors had no idea how the basic structure of the body works.
Don't you just love that? And I remember back in the 80s where they still called chiropractors quacks.
Oh, yeah.
And now, in hindsight, we go, oh, no, they never did that, did they? You know, because Anybody who's been to one knows how well that works.
I know. Quack or not, yeah.
Right. You know, and they call a lot of what I do, they like to call me a snake oil salesman because
they feel it's a
derogatory indication, you know. But the fact of the matter is I'm helping people that they can't help. I have three or four doctors who are friends of mine, and they send me their most difficult cases.
Uh-huh.
That says something.
Yeah, we have the people at Kaiser sending us people, you know?
Yep, yep. And I have friends that come to me all the time that have given up on their doctors. They say, well, he's done this and this and this, and it didn't work. Steve, can you help me? And I'll say, well, this is what I would do, hint, hint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It can
There's
make a huge
of,
difference.
There's a lot of viable solutions out there in the natural health products realm that if the people look for them, we'll be delighted with. And in our society right now, that's the only way they're going to be able to find them. They have to look. We can't present them. They have to find us.
Yes. That's true.
But hopefully, your listeners are attuned to that and know how to find this stuff. And if you'll allow me a plug again, go to My Nature's Right, MyNaturesRight.com. We've got all sorts of things to help you, and it really, everyone at the company, it just makes our day when we've helped you and you call back and you give us one of your glorious stories of recovery. That's that's what makes all the garbage that we have to deal with all day long. That's what makes it worthwhile. If it weren't for that, we wouldn't do it.
Right. Right. So I wanted to ask you, back to your particular experience, was it your sleep apnea problem that had you looking more into Western or more into Eastern medicine from a background of Western?
Actually, it started before that. That was further down the road, significantly further down the road, that I discovered that product. And incidentally, it took me 8 years to get the patent on that because the patent office couldn't understand it. They kept thinking that it wasn't novel. I'm like, really? It's not novel. It's the only thing like it on the planet. How much more novel can you get? But before that, what drove me in that direction, I was designing medical equipment. We were designing some absolutely crazy stuff, applying extraordinary technology to heinously primitive medical technique. Making instruments for using plasma arcs to open up fully occluded coronary arteries, grabbing T cells to keep an immune response for organ transplants. We were doing precipitators to pull LDL and VLDL cholesterol out of your plasma. Just amazing technology applied to heinously primitive medicine. And when I had kids and started bringing them in to the doctor for something simple like ear infection, and all they could do was give me systemic oral antibiotics to treat an infection in the ear, and it would get rid of it, and a month later it would come back. And I'd say, look, doc, I'm an engineer, and if what I'm doing doesn't work, I try something else. What else have you got? And they said, well, this is it. This is it. This or we put tubes in his ears. I'm like, but that's just a terrible solution. So my wife at the time said, maybe you should look at tea tree oil. And I was like, yeah, right. That was pretty funny, tea tree oil, right? And we did. We got some tea tree oil eardrops made by a company, I think it was called Probiotic. I forget what it was called. And put them in, and they worked. And the ear infections didn't come back. And I thought, well, okay, there's something here.
That was back in
like 1996 or something. And so I started studying natural medical techniques and herbology and just soaking this stuff up so that I could keep my family healthy. And as I kept learning more and more, I was keeping family and friends healthy, and it blossomed into this 25 years of doing this craziness.
That's a neat
story.
There's
a lot easier ways. Yeah. I tell, there's a lot easier ways to earn a living. And sometimes I think back and I said, well, why didn't you do one, you know? But the satisfaction that comes from solving problems that no one else can solve makes it worthwhile.
Yeah, exactly.
So it started with an earache and then moved into, cold sores. My wife used to get cold sores. So I made a device for treating those. Yeah. I made a device called Dermaseptic, which was a pocket-size ionophoresis device. It did silver ionophoresis, and boy, did that work well. That was the end of the cold sore problem. So then we moved into aqueous silver colloids and started using those for colds and for sinus infections, and later on using it for lower respiratory infections to deal with Mycobacterium avium and abscessus and M. tuberculosis. And it just kept being fun.
Very nice.
Well, I suppose I should let you wrap the show up. It's almost tomorrow here on the East Coast.
Thank you again.
Thanks again for having me on.
No, I really enjoyed our talk. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Doesn't look like we have any questions, so I will say good night, Steve, and thank you so much for your input. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Dr. Doran. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Good night.